Mission Gesundheit. Am Puls des medizinischen Fortschritts mit Dr. Hadi Saleh.
Herzlich willkommen zur 31. Folge Mission Gesundheit. Ich bin Dr. Hadi Saleh. Einige Tiere haben die bemerkenswerte Fähigkeit, verlorene Körperteile nachwachsen zu lassen. Viele Arten von Seesternen beispielsweise können verlorene Arme regenerieren und auch einige Krakenarten können dies. Vielleicht kennen einige von euch aus dem Urlaub Geckos, die bei Gefahr ihren Schwanz abwerfen. Auch dieser wächst später wieder nach. Dies ist eine faszinierende Form der Regeneration, die als Autotomie bekannt ist. Genau genommen ist Autotomie ein Verteidigungsmechanismus. Der Schwanz ist also ein wichtiger Teil der Überlebensstrategie des Tieres. Wenn ein Raubtier, wie zum Beispiel ein Vogel, den Geckoschwanz ergreift, kann der Gecko ihn autotomieren, indem er eine spezielle Bruchstelle entlang seiner Wirbelsäule nutzt. Der abgetrennte Schwanz zuckt dann weiterhin unabhängig vom Körper, was die Aufmerksamkeit des Angreifers auf sich zieht, während der Gecko selbst entkommen kann. Nachdem der Schwanz abgeworfen wurde, beginnt der Regenerationsprozess. In der Regel wächst der Schwanz innerhalb von einigen Wochen bis Monaten wieder nach. Ein Tier kann es aber noch übertreffen. Der Axolotl. Diese amphibische Kreatur kann nicht nur Gliedmaßen, sondern ganze Teile des Gehirns und sogar das Herz nachwachsen lassen. Dieser Prozess ermöglicht es, schwere Verletzungen zu überleben und sich von ihnen vollständig zu erholen. Stellt euch eine Welt vor, in der der menschliche Körper wie der eines Axolotls wäre. Fähig, verlorene Gliedmaßen, beschädigte Organe oder sogar Teile des Gehirns und des Herzens nachwachsen zu lassen. Eine solche Fähigkeit würde nicht nur unser Verständnis von Heilung und Rehabilitation revolutionieren, sondern auch eine neue Ära der Medizin einleiten. Krankheiten und Verletzungen würden nicht mehr zwangsläufig zu dauerhaften Beeinträchtigungen führen. Verletzungen, die heute oft zu dauerhaften Behinderungen führen, könnten in dieser Zukunftsvision einfach wie ein gebrochener Knochen oder eine Wunde behandelt werden. Ein verlorener Arm bei einem Autounfall? Kein Problem. Er würde nach einiger Zeit wieder nachwachsen. Ein geschädigtes Herz durch eine Herzerkrankung? Der Körper könnte sich selbst regenerieren und das Herz reparieren. Die Angst vor dauerhaften Behinderungen oder schweren Erkrankungen würde abnehmen, da die Gewissheit besteht, dass der Körper in der Lage ist, sich selbst zu heilen. Transplantationen werden nicht mehr die einzige Lösung bei schwerwiegenden Organschäden. Statt darauf zu warten, dass ein Spenderorgan verfügbar wird, könnte der Körper einfach sein eigenes Organ nachwachsen lassen. Klingt unmöglich, aber genau das ist das Ziel unseres heutigen Gastes.
Experte der Woche.
Meine Expertin in dieser Woche ist Dr. Vanessa Restrepo-Schild. Sie hat an der University von Oxford einen Doctor of Philosophy und einen PhD in Chemistry erworben. Aktuell ist sie Teamlead und Lab Program Manager für Analytical Sciences. Das heißt, Vanessa leitet ein Team von 6 spezialisierten Wissenschaftlern in Großbritannien, Frankreich und Deutschland. Ihre Verantwortlichkeiten erstrecken sich über die Abteilung für Proteinforschung und analytische Wissenschaften mit einem Fokus auf Wirkstoffentdeckung und Zell- und Gentherapie. Seit Anfang 2022 ist Vanessa auch als Programmmanagerin für ein Demonstrationslabor tätig, wobei ihre Aufgaben die Überwachung des Laborbetriebs, die Bearbeitung von Proben und die Entwicklung von Assays sowie Schulungen umfassen. Ihre Arbeit konzentriert sich auf die Entwicklung synthetischer Gewebe und bioelektrischer Implantate, die als nahtlose Mensch-Maschine-Schnittstellen konzipiert sind. So Vanessa, thank you very much for stopping by. You want to shape the future of medicine. What exactly inspired you to research the field of synthetic tissue and bioelectric implants?
Well, first, thank you for the invitation. That is an excellent question. And this is a project that I've started 2 decades ago. And one of the questions that I've had is cells talk. So when are we going to learn their language? And my work has been centered on developing the future of medicine with the development of synthetic tissues and bioelectronic implants that are designed to be seamless human-machine interfaces.
Can you explain what are bioelectric implants?
Absolutely. So let's start with, you know, what are they as tools? So at the heart of my work, I have synthetic tissues that are embedded with membrane proteins that are capable of transmitting ions and molecules to neighboring human tissues. And so these human tissues are at present, they are not in a patient. They are human tissues that are cultivated in a controlled lab environment.
What exactly do they do? And what's the ultimate goal of your research?
The synthetic tissues they mimic the natural communication pathways of cells. And as you know, these pathways are, they rely on ions and molecules to convey vital information. So my goal has been to decode the cellular language, to be able to send messages to living tissues that will result in the control of morphogenesis.
So is it more like a computer brain interface that you're targeting? What is it exactly, the end game?
The first prototypes that I've designed are all soft materials. And so the soft materials are embedded with membrane proteins. And so you remotely activate those membrane proteins and they're able to release either ions or small molecules that are necessary to send a signal to the neighboring cells. And so in a way, you can imagine them as a pretend cell. It is basically a soft material disguising itself as a cell that is communicating to its neighboring cell.
And what is the final application? I mean, where do you see it, you know, in the human body at some point in time?
So it's very blue sky thinking, but, you know, by sending precise signals through the bioelectronic implant, we can observe first and document the responses of human tissues. So, for example, we send one signal and then we record how the tissue responded. Okay, so now we know that if we send this signal, this is what the tissue understands. That happens. And so little by little, experiment by experiment, we'll be able to decode what the different messages that we can send trigger on these tissues. And so first, this approach will in the future allow us to construct a comprehensive library of cellular interactions. So we'll be able to map out the intricate dialogue between our messages and their response. And then I want to achieve things that haven't been done before. So as we unravel the complexities of these cellular conversations, we move closer to what I consider to be a revolutionary capability, the orchestration of complex message sequences. So, you know, if you join me in my crazy thinking, you can imagine a future where we can control morphogenesis, as I was alluding earlier, the process that causes an organism to develop its shape. So by precisely directing cellular behavior, we could achieve this. And this could potentially enable us to regrow entire limbs, to restore full functionality. And you know, for me, what motivates me is to be able to transform lives as a result of this.
It sounds very much like science fiction. How real is it?
So it is, at the moment, science fiction. And I have always been very motivated by science fiction. I am a little nerd at heart. So what have we achieved so far? So we have been able to create soft materials that are covered with membrane proteins. Have a membrane and are covered with millions of membrane proteins. And we can, with external signals, in this case light, are able to speak with primary tissues, so with human tissues that come from patients. They are patient tissues, and we're able to send them signals, which then generate secondary responses. So, for example, we can, in the microscope, record as we send them one signal, we can record how they communicate with each other. Let's say how we can change their calcium fluctuations, and we can record this in a reproducible manner. And so little by little, as we can send more signals, we'll be able to record many more messages and build this library that I dream of building.
How do you see the future of your research and the application in medicine specifically?
So I see huge applications. And one of the things I always like to think of is biomimicry. And so if I go a few steps back and I share a little bit of what I'm thinking, so we know that there are many animals that can regenerate, right? You know, there's the key example of the axolotl.
Yeah.
You know, these are aquatic salamanders and they are really renowned for their ability to regenerate entire limbs. But they not only are able to regenerate entire limbs, they can regenerate other body parts. For example, they can regenerate the heart, they can regenerate the spinal cord, and even parts of their brain. And they are not, you know, they're not the only ones. You know, we can see, you know, starfish, lizards, crustaceans, planarians, you know, sea cucumbers. But do we have many examples of this happening in mammals? So, for example, Hadi, do you have any thoughts of any animal that might be common that could do regeneration?
No.
So one animal that I find really interesting is the deer. Because the deers, although they don't do regeneration or regrowing in the traditional sense, you know, we have male deers that are able to regrow their antlers every year. And this is a unique form of regeneration amongst mammals. So we as humans, well, not just us as humans, but, you know, our early mammals, early ancestors, lost their ability to regenerate. And presumably this was an evolutionary pressure. We needed to be able to wound healing quickly, to scar quickly, so that we wouldn't be victims of predation. But even us humans, still have the ability to regenerate in our early years. And so as a medical doctor, particularly as an orthopedic doctor, you may have seen these reports of children under the age of 3 that are able to regrow their fingertips.
Yeah.
And those, we can talk about these reports, but to me, this gives us the clues as to how we will be able to do this for humans in the future.
It's super interesting. When do you expect us to have enough data from your research so we can put it into clinical practice and actually regrow our limbs?
So unless there is an innovation that disrupts what is currently happening, and unless we have many more scientists working towards this goal, I don't want to be one of the few. I want many more people to be working towards this goal so that we're not looking at something that is many decades in the future. Hopefully we will have disruptive innovations that will allow us to fast track, you know, this process. I would love to have a collective program where various researchers, you know, fill up in a database their different findings. So if I've sent this cocktail of molecules and I've sent these ionic signals through membrane proteins, and this is the response that I obtained. And hopefully through, you know, now the AI revolution, we will be able to work through this data in a quicker fashion and start to do trials in the clinic. But at the moment, this is many decades into the future.
That's too bad. But how do stem cells play a role in your research?
So there are many ways in that there are many things that we need to do to be able to have this work. So stem cells are part of this. So you know that for the example of the children under 3, one of the reasons why it is thought that this can happen for them is the availability of stem cells, the availability of different small molecules and different proteins that are not as readily available in the adults. So you have to think about, you know, if we're thinking about regenerating a limb, we need to think about wound healing and inflammation management to begin with. Then thinking about the formation of what we call a regenerative blastema. So people might know about blastemas from embryogenesis, but you can have a regenerative blastema. And this is basically a mass of undifferentiated cells that that form at the injury site. And so coming to your question on stem cells, this is similar to a stem cell niche. And you need to have that formation in order to have regeneration. And there you have many key signaling pathways that you need to take into consideration. For example, BMP, which you may be very familiar with, the bone morphogenetic protein, which is essential for bone formation and growth. And you also have to consider WNT and beta-catenin pathway, for example, for cell proliferation and differentiation. You need to think about FGF, which is fibroblast growth factor, which then will promote the proliferation of progenitor cells and angiogenesis as well. And then you also, you know, this is a complex set of messages and a set of conditions that have to be orchestrated. But you also have to consider the differentiation. So cells at the injury site might need to revert to a more primitive state. Mm. And so this can be induced. You can think about factors such as MSX1 or MSX2, for example. You need to do stem cell activation and recruitment. So, you know, you have to activate resident stem cells or recruit stem cells from, say, the bone marrow or other tissues. You need to use a variety of growth factors. And we can go on. You can ask me more questions. Otherwise, I will speak for ages.
You are very likely familiar with Shin Yamanaka's work on, you know, the Yamanaka factors.
Seem
to reverse, well, not seem, it's proven to reverse differentiated cells into, you know, undifferentiated stem cells, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, Yamanaka factors are, you know, come up over and over in my research because, of course, we have to utilize stem cells. And, you know, I find it fascinating how, through all of these initial studies, you know, the stages in which we are now, where we have such a wider understanding of, you know, how to work the problem. And not only can we generate stem cells, but, okay, what can we do in situ, in the, you know, in the patient on site?
I apologize to my listeners for geeking out with you on very specific growth factors and Yamanaka factors. But getting back more the more mundane field, what kind of support do you need to further advance your research?
So to me, it will be crucial to first form a collective. So a group of scientists from all over the world working towards the same goal. Hopefully we will all be working with, let's say, a grant or private funding that will allow for this to take place and happen. And having an online depository with where all of us can be adding our data, because ideally we will be having, you know, millions and billions of recordings of these interactions with living cells so that we can finally decode their language and we can finally simply say, okay, we need to build an implant that does exactly this. And this is, you know, this is where we are going to put it. We will release these signals and these signals will continue to occur because this requires a lot of, you know, biological engineering, you know, building the right materials that are able to send these ions and these small molecules, these growth factors, that they can send them in a spatiotemporal manner, you know, send them to the right place at the right time over and over again. And so, yeah, for me, it will be really necessary to build a collective, so to have more people working towards this goal.
Yeah, I can clearly sense the passion that you have for your field. And one final question. What three pieces of advice would you give young researchers who want to work in that field?
For me, it's key that researchers kind of shake off all of the, perhaps, the limiting ways in which academia is currently running. You know, there's a lot of, you know, do things that have already been published, do things that are guaranteed to get you to X journal. I would like to see more researchers, you know, shaking all of those ideas off and simply asking basic questions, asking very simple, perhaps even stupid questions, and pursuing those questions in a naive way without fear of the unknown, without fear that this might lead to no paper, that this might lead to no results. I think academia at the moment has become almost like a factory to me, and it has lost the beauty of exploration for the sake of exploration. And I would say that, you know, it's so important for young researchers to know that if you're passionate and if you keep working hard towards a goal, if a question keeps popping up in your head and doesn't go away, it's probably a really good question that needs to be answered. And if you keep kind of hacking at it, you will eventually discover something magnificent. And yeah, we all have to work around the way that academia works and maybe move to industry or maybe do collaborations that would allow you to have papers and continue in this academic world. But yeah, never leave that naive kind of childlike state of, you know, why does this happen and how does this work?
Vanessa, thank you very much for your time and this interesting discussion. And thank you also for your work in trying to make the world a better place and propelling humanity into, you know, a better future state. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Hadi. A pleasure to be here and a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Die Fakten der Folge.
Im Mittelpunkt von Vanessas Arbeit stehen synthetische Gewebe, die mit Membranproteinen eingebettet sind und in der Lage sind, Ionen und Moleküle an benachbarte menschliche Gewebe zu übertragen, die in einer kontrollierten Laborumgebung kultiviert werden. Diese synthetischen Gewebe ahmen die natürlichen Kommunikationswege von Zellen nach, die auf Ionen und Moleküle angewiesen sind, um lebenswichtige Informationen zu übermitteln. Das Ziel dahinter ist, die zelluläre Sprache zu entschlüsseln. Durch das Senden präziser Signale über das bioelektrische Implantat können die Reaktionen menschlicher Gewebe beobachtet und dokumentiert werden. Dieser Ansatz wird es in Zukunft ermöglichen, eine umfassende Bibliothek zellulärer Interaktion zu erstellen, die den komplexen Dialog zwischen den gesendeten Nachrichten und den Antworten der Zellen kartiert. Eine dadurch entstehende Möglichkeit könnte sein, dass wir Zellen so beeinflussen, dass sie sich selbst regenerieren. Das heißt, wir könnten in der Zukunft verlorene Körperteile und Organe nachwachsen lassen. Heute noch Science Fiction, in der Zukunft vielleicht gang und gäbe. Das war eine weitere Folge von Mission Gesundheit. Vielen Dank, dass ihr auch heute wieder Teil meiner spannenden Reise durch die Welt der Medizin geworden seid. Ich hoffe, dass ihr wertvolle Einblicke und Inspirationen aus unserer heutigen Diskussion mitnehmen konntet. Und schreibt uns an podcast@ceramtech.de. Was habt ihr für Fragen? Was wollt ihr schon immer einmal wissen? Ich bin gespannt auf eure Gedanken.
Hadis Random Reminder.
Random Reminder: Alkohol und Zigaretten so gut es geht vermeiden. Es ist kein Geheimnis, dass Alkohol und Zigaretten sehr schädlich für unsere Gesundheit sind. Und doch werden wir immer mal wieder schwach. Der Konsum von Alkohol und Zigaretten erhöht das Risiko für eine Vielzahl von Krebsarten und das Risiko für Herzkrankheiten, Herzinfarkte und Schlaganfälle steigt. Der Verzicht trägt erheblich zur Verbesserung der körperlichen und psychischen Gesundheit bei und wir stärken so unser Immunsystem. Es lohnt sich also sehr, diese Substanzen zu vermeiden, denn Studien zeigen, dass der Verzicht auf Alkohol und Zigaretten die Lebenserwartung verlängern kann. Ein gesünderer Lebensstil führt zu einem längeren und erfüllteren Leben. Und der Verzicht auf Alkohol und Zigaretten kann die körperliche Leistungsfähigkeit und Ausdauer steigern. Sportliche Aktivitäten werden angenehmer und effektiver. Also mein Random Reminder in dieser Woche: Vermeidet Alkohol und Zigaretten so gut ihr könnt. Bis zum nächsten Mal, bleibt gesund und neugierig.
Das war Mission Gesundheit. Am Puls des medizinischen Fortschritts mit Dr. Hadi Saleh. Eine Produktion von CeramTech, einer der weltweit führenden Medizintechnik-Plattformen. Sie haben eine Frage an Dr. Hadi Saleh? Schreiben Sie uns an podcast@ceramtech.de.